Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Tamimam te pravakshyami. Yamavocham puranaghe. Rishinam shrutukamanam. Yogam sarvanga naipunam. Tamimam te pravakshyami. Yamavocham puranaghe. Vishinam shrutukamanam. Yogam sarvanga naipunam. Tamimam te pravakshyami. Tam imam.
That very.
Te
to you.
Pravakshyami.
I shall explain.
Which? Avocham. I explained. Pura. Formerly. Anage.
O pious mother.
Rishinam. To these sages.
Shrotukamanam.
Eager to hear. Yogam. Yoga system. Sarvanga.
In all respects.
Naipunam.
Serviceable and practical.
Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. O most pious mother, I shall now explain unto you the ancient yoga system, which I explained formerly to the great sages. It is serviceable and practical in every way. Purport, the Lord does not manufacture a new system of yoga. Sometimes it is claimed that someone has become an incarnation of God and is expounding a new theological aspect of the absolute truth. But here we find that although Kapila Muni is the Lord himself and is capable of manufacturing a new doctrine for his mother, he nevertheless says, I shall just explain the ancient system which I once explained to the great sages, because they were also anxious to hear about it. When we have a super excellent process already present in Vedic scripture, there is no need to concoct a new system to mislead the innocent public. At present, it has become a fashion to reject the standard system and present something bogus in the name of a newly invented process of yoga. So when we get a piece of pie with ice cream on top of it, it's called pie a la mode. I don't know the exact history of it. Probably come from some French fancy in the 18th century, some Parisian thing. A la mode, according to the current style. So in Europe, especially in France, every 10 years, the dress, every few years, the dress style changes. Constantly. You know, the way that people dressed in 1640, and the way they, in one country, and the way they dressed there in 1650 was quite a bit different. You know, constantly changing style. It's just artificial. It has nothing to do with reality. But it's just that, you know, just to keep people entertained and to keep the tailors and others employed, the styles always have to change. A la mode, according to the current style. And unfortunately, it's like that in philosophy also. Nachasav Rishir Yasyamatam Nabinam. You know, no one's considered a real philosopher unless he can come up with a new style, a la mode. He has to... when I went to the university as a freshman, in Columbia University you have to... there are three requirements for everybody. There are two courses you take in your freshman year. One is some humanities course where you read great literature in translation. And the other one is Western civilization, or modern civilization, where actually we study philosophy. And Descartes was the first philosopher. We studied about Descartes for about 3 days. And then the professor said, okay, and then on Wednesday we'll start with the next philosopher, and you know we'll show how he rejected everything that Descartes said and started over again. And I very quickly lost my interest in this philosophy, because what's the use? He spent 3 days on one philosopher, and the next philosopher tears him apart and starts all over again. That's Western philosophy. Is you have to reject your guru and disprove everything he says. There's some traces, that is sometimes manifested even in Indian philosophy. There are upstarts like Raghunath Shiromani, who, first of all, they made a new logical system that changed some of the doctrines of the ancient system of Gautama to supposedly improve it. But this Raghunath Shiromani, disciple of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, was not satisfied with that. He had to reject most of the teachings of the Navanyaya school and recreate the system for himself. But that's rare in Indian philosophy, because India has got a consciousness of hearing from authority and accepting authority. Indians are accustomed, at least until very recently, to listening to their superiors. A man can't even live his own life. He may be 40 years old, but he has to obey his older brother, who's 43 years old. And he can't live his own life. But that's bad in one way. Young people want to join ISKCON, and their parents don't let them. That's unfortunate, but there's a good side to it too, is that there's a respect for authority. There's willingness to hear from authority instead of making up something new. And when knowledge is established, especially when the knowledge is something coming from an eternal source, when it's constant knowledge, then it's perfectly appropriate that we simply receive it from the predecessors who know it very well. There's no need to recreate the system. Even in modern science, when you learn chemistry or physics in school, you learn the things that have already been discovered. And then after you've studied chemistry for several years, then you might go into a laboratory and do some innovative experimentation, but based on the findings of everybody going back to the 18th century. Nobody is going to be crazy enough to decide to scrap it all and rediscover all the basics of chemistry for himself. So there's respect for authority even in hard science. It's only in philosophy that it's every man for himself. But it isn't. It's not supposed to be in traditional Indian philosophy. It's rational. If something is, especially if the knowledge is unchangeable, and the people in the past, the great sages, had very good insight into this, into these different aspects of knowledge, then why not simply try to understand what they said? Some kinds of knowledge has to change according to changing circumstances. So although the Upanishads, the Atma-Tattva, the science of Atma-Tattva, is constant. The whole world can change completely. We can pass from Satya-Yuga through the three ages and then into Kali-Yuga, and conditions change drastically. But the Atma-Tattva doesn't change, no matter where you are, what part of the universe, what loka, and what yuga. The Atma-Tattva, the science of the self, should be constant. So the teachings of the Upanishads is unchanging. Bhagavad Gita is the Sarva Upanishadam Gravaho. It's the Upanishad Sada. It's also called Gita Upanishad. It also presents the essence of Atma Tattva. So the knowledge of the Gita is unchanging. I don't think there's anything in the Gita that's dated, anything in Krishna's teachings in the Gita that doesn't apply the same way it applied 5,000 years ago. I mean, okay, there's some specific discussion of who was on the battlefield at a particular time 5,000 years ago, and they're not there now. But after you get past that, those first few verses in the first chapter, everything that's said in the Gita is of constant relevance. And not one piece of that information fails to be true and relevant. It's constant, eternal knowledge. Because it's Vedic knowledge. It's Veda. It's Upanishad. Gita Upanishad. So, imam vivasate yogam proktavan aham avyayam. Avyayam is literally what doesn't get spent. Vyaya is expense. In Jataka astrology, the 10th house is the house of Labha. No, I'm sorry, 11th house? Yeah, 10th house is the house of Labha. Gain, acquisition. You can find out in the 10th house how you'll make money. And then you want to find out how you're going to lose your money or how you're going to spend your money, go to the next house, the 11th house, Vyaya, expense. So avyaya means what is never expended. Just like Draupadi had the avyaya patra, or Arjuna had the avyaya sayaka, the, not sayaka, akshaya. Okay, but it's also avyaya. Inexpendable, okay? Akshaya means it doesn't rot, but really the idea is that it doesn't get used up. He had as many arrows as he used, he had more arrows in the pouch. You know, that's a problem for archers. You know, how many arrows can you stick in your pouch? And then when you shoot them all, you're out. And you have to carry extra pouches with you, or send the charioteer back to get more. But Arjuna had an inexhaustible sayaka. Tuna is another name for it. Tuna is the pouch, leather pouch that you carry the arrows in. Archers have to use leather. They have leather covering for their fingers, so the string doesn't cut their fingers. So they wear leather. They have a leather pouch. Avyayam. Proktavanaham avyayam. This yoga that I teach, I'm going to now tell to you, Arjuna. It's eternal, avyayam, unchanging. Poktavanaham avyayam, I spoke it in ancient times, vivasvate, to the sun god. He's been around, the sun god has been here since the beginning of this manvantara. At least 100 million years. Because modern science says the sun has been here for 2 billion years? I don't know if this calculation comes out the same in the Vedic calculation, but a long time. So I spoke, Prabhupada I think says that it was millions of years ago that he, or 2 million years ago or something, that he spoke the Bhagavad Gita to Vivasvan. And it's the same yoga that I'm going to now speak to you, Arjuna. The Bhagavad Gita is eternal, unchanging knowledge. So Arjuna, Shrinu, you just listen to me. How many times does Krishna say Shrinu in the Gita? Over 50 times to Arjuna. You know, just like someone's not listening, you got to tell them, please listen, please listen, please listen. Tell him 50 times and maybe the 50th time he'll finally understand he's supposed to listen. So just to make sure that Arjuna knows, you know, turn off your creative mind and just listen to what I'm telling you. You know, you receive this knowledge of Bhagavad Gita, you don't have to make up something new. Similarly, Kapila Dev just said, no, he will say tomorrow, Tamimam Teva Vakshyami Yama Vocham Puranage. My dear mother, I'm going to tell you what I told a long time ago to the sages. A long time ago, when my previous incarnation as Kapila. Previous Manvantara, whatever it was. As explained by Rupa Goswami and Lago Bhagavatamrita, the schedules are different. A few avatars, like Vamanadeva appear in every single Manvantara. Others appear sort of haphazardly, 3 or 4 times in a day of Brahma, 5 times sometimes, it varies. And some only appear once in the day of Brahma, like Krishna himself and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It's just different for each avatar, how often they actually appear. But Kapila Dev appeared sometime in the past. I don't know how far back it was, but it was in ancient times. Ancient for him. He's in some Satyuga. Which Satyuga I can't say. Not even necessarily this day of Brahma. He appeared millions or billions of years ago. And he's talking about millions or billions of years before him, when he appeared before that. I spoke this knowledge of Sankhya, and I'm going to speak the same thing to you now, unchanged. So some knowledge, especially knowledge of Atma-tattva, he identifies this as Atma, Adhyatmika, Yoga Adhyatmika, and Sri Goswami says Atmanishta. So this is Atma-tattva. Atma-tattva, the science of the self, is unchanging. But there are other sciences that do have to be adapted to place and time. Dharma Shastra has to be bespoken in each yuga because the circumstances change. And what is appropriate legislature for one yuga has to be changed for another. You know, so there are 57 or more different Dharma Shastras. They were written by different sages in different yugas and for different communities of people, you know, different cultures, different places, let's say. So we have a whole collection of different Dharma Shastras. They, to some extent, all say the same thing, but there are variations. There are differences among them. One Dharma Shastra says that a widow has a legal claim to her dowry, and another says that she doesn't, or that a daughter can share the father's inheritance. And another Dharma Shastra says no, the daughter doesn't get. Different rules. The Dharma Shastras have to change from age to age, but the Atma Tattva Shastra doesn't. Today was 13, right? No, 14. Oh, that was today's verse, okay. Anyway, what Kapiladev is teaching is the eternal knowledge of the practical life of self-realization, in which one learns what is the Supreme and what one's relationship with the Supreme is. So this is called yoga, or rather the Sankhya system. Although Sankhya and yoga are correlative systems. Although this categorization of 6 different kinds of philosophy, this is actually oversimplification. There are more philosophical systems than 6. But there are 6 big ones, 6 famous ones, and they're usually grouped together. Whether that's a recent creation, the system of 6, there's arguments over that. Whether in ancient times they even had such a concept of 6 different philosophies, or whether that's just something more recent. We don't see in Mahabharata talking about 6 philosophies. We're talking about 3 or 4 in Mahabharata. But anyway, there's a traditional idea of 6 different philosophies, and they're grouped in pairs, sister schools. One of the sisters provides the ontology, the other the epistemology, or the other way around. First, the ontology and the epistemology will be presented by one. The understanding of epistemology means asking the questions and trying to give some answers about how do you know anything. Can you know anything for certain? And what's the means to know something for certain? Those are the questions of epistemology, the philosophy of knowledge. If you don't ask those questions before proceeding, with your philosophy, then your philosophy is naive. A well-founded philosophy has to start with epistemology, the question of how do you know anything in the first place? And then ontology, the object of knowledge. What can you know? What are the categories of reality? That's the questions of ontology. What is there out there? Now we know how to know it. Well, what can we know? What is there to know? That's ontology. So those theoretical, that theoretical aspect of philosophy is the specialty of one school, and the sister school deals with the practice, the application, pure and applied philosophy. So we have the two sisters, Sankhya and Yoga. Sankhya is the theory. Yoga is the practice of the same theory. It shares the same theory. The Sankhya system doesn't bother to provide a sadhana, a practice, because that's provided by yoga. And yoga doesn't try to make up its own metaphysics, because that's provided by its sister school, Sankhya. And similarly, the Nyaya and Vaisheshika schools are connected. The Vaisheshika is the theory of an analyzing the world according to their system. And the Nyaya school is the sadhana, but their idea of sadhana is logical argument, logical analysis. And that's that you tattvanam, how does it, I'm sorry, buddhe nikshayasodayaha. The perfection of life is achieved by understanding the 16 categories of reality logically. By logically analyzing the 16 categories of reality, you will perfect your life and gain liberation. That is Gotama's thesis, his pratigya, at the beginning of the Gotama Nyaya Sutras. And then the idea of what is liberation is the cessation of all miseries and all the causes of misery. But one of the causes of misery is consciousness. So consciousness will have to also be eliminated. Mm. And so the liberated Atma has no consciousness. And the Vedantas say, well, then you're in your liberation, you become a dead stone. Who wants that? No, but that is the Gotama's idea of liberation. So he's presenting his idea of sadhana, practical application of the theory of Vaisheshika. So the two schools go together. And the last two schools, Purva and Uttara Mimamsa, the Karma Mimamsa and the Brahma Mimamsa, or Vedanta. Actually, the Karma Mimamsa provides the theory. How can you understand the meaning of the Vedic text? All the canons of hermeneutics or interpretation of ancient scripture are given by Jaimini in his sutras. How to understand, like, you're told sacrifice pigeons. It doesn't say how many pigeons. So I have to actually perform the sacrifice. How many pigeons am I supposed to sacrifice? And the Brahmana, you know, the mantra is there in the Samhitas. And there's no instructions how to use them, but there's instructions how to use the mantras for an actual sacrifice are there in the Brahmanas. And the Brahmana says, I don't know, somewhere it says, you know, kapinjalai ishtam kuryat. You should do the ceremony with kapinjalas. Offer, you know, sacrifice pigeons. Plural, but it doesn't say how many exactly. So I want to actually do the sacrifice. How many pigeons am I supposed to get? 50,000? Four? So Jaimini gives a rule. When a plural number is given, unspecified, assume it's three. Okay? So then you know. Okay, three pigeons. By Jaimini's interpretive rule. So that is the theory. How to understand Shastra using certain canons of interpretation. Just like, you know, the Taittiriya Upanishad talks about five different koshas, five different concepts of the self. Who's this Anandamaya? Is it the Jiva soul? Is it the Brahman himself? Or is Brahman something beyond the Anandamaya? What is, you know, what's what here? Because it gets confusing. So Jaimini gives us the methodology by which we can decide Anandamayo Bhyasat. Abhyasa is one of the principles for when you have a long passage and you want to decide what's the theme of the entire passage. You have six signs, lingas. What is it? Abhyasa purvita palam. Upakram upasamharav abhyaso purvita palam. Upapattischa. One I'm missing. Upapattischa. Linga tatparya nirnaye. To decide what's the tatparya, or the gist of a whole section, not just one sentence, but a long section of Shastra. You can see, look for these signs. What's mentioned in the beginning, upakrama, and what's mentioned at the end? And especially if the same idea is mentioned at both the beginning and the end, that's the first good sign, the best sign, that's the theme of the passage, what's mentioned at both the beginning and the end. And then the next one is abhyasa. If something is mentioned repeatedly, then that must be the theme. So, anandamayo abhyasat. Anandamayo is Brahman, the absolute truth, because of the repetition of the term in the context where it could be nothing but Brahman, the absolute truth. Because repeatedly, the absolute truth is referred to wherever anandamaya is mentioned. Therefore, that anandamaya is Brahman, not Jiva, not something else, because of repetition. So that's taught by Bhadarayana Vyas in the Brahma Sutras, but he's using the principle taught by Jaimini. Paramatam apratishitam anumatam. It may be an opposing school, but if they say something that's useful and that we don't have a specific contradiction against it, we adopt it, even the opponent's teaching. Paramatam, someone else's opinion, the opponent's opinion, apratishitam, not specifically contradicted, anumatam, we accept it and make use of it. So they're sister schools, but they have disagreements. Purva and Uttara Mimamsa. But on this, on the principle of using abhyasa and the other signs to tell what is the purport of a passage, we use that methodology. Vyasadeva uses it, borrowing the principle from Jaimini. So here, Kapila is supposed to be teaching Sankhya, the theory. But he's not just a dry theoretician. He's not teaching philosophy, not studying philosophy just for its own sake. Nowadays, most philosophers just do that. They just love philosophy, philosophia, love of knowledge. Because it has no practical use. There is no application to anything real. So you have to be, infatuated with it. Otherwise, why waste your time? Why become a member of the Department of Philosophy? What kind of, there's no government grants available. Very few students are interested in it. But you must be a fanatic for philosophy to become a philosopher, because there's no practical use for it. But Kapila is not a fanatic theoretician. He's interested in the practice. So he's talking about yoga here. Not just about theory, about application, about practice, about using the knowledge. And using it, nikshreyasaya, to achieve the perfection of life. Not just to sit in an office smoking your pipe and collecting a salary and teaching a couple of students. To solve the real problems of life and bring about the real ecstatic perfection. Sarvanga naipunam, serviceable and practical in every way. That's the yoga that he's teaching. Okay, are there any questions or comments? Ashtavakra taught, he lived in the previous age, first of all. So it's not that there wasn't any Vedanta before the current yuga cycle. in every, there's a Vyasadeva in every, at the end of every Dwarpa Yuga appearing, and maybe each Vyasadeva doesn't, every single one maybe doesn't write a Vedanta Sutra, maybe not. But there were previous teachers of Vedanta. Ashtavakra taught Vedanta in a previous age. I think he's a Mayavadi.
I think so.
But it was a previous teacher long before Vyasadeva appeared. Vyasadeva quotes five or six previous authorities on Vedanta in his sutras. He gives the names. Yes, Apashali and Bhadari, which is not Bhadarayana, somebody else called Bhadari. He quotes several others. He quotes his own student Yaimini also. He quotes their opinions. And they were, except for Jaimini, who's younger than Vyas, all the others were predecessors who also were authorities on Vedanta. And they don't all agree. They have different theories. He quotes their opinions and then as Purvapakshas and then defeats them. Then presents his own opinion, which is different.
Vyas.
Bhadarayana Vyas, yeah. So there were previous teachers, but they didn't all teach the same interpretation or the same understanding of Vedanta. They had their own theories. And Ashtavakra, I think, was a Mayavadi. There's another one called, a famous one called Atantaratama. But that was actually Vyasadeva himself in his previous life. Yeah. And he was teaching Vedanta back then, a different version of Vedanta, under that name.
He wasn't a Vyasadeva, he was just...
Oh, I don't think he was a Vyasadeva, he was a sage. There is a Vyas, but that's a title. But he's Krishna Dvaipayana Vyas. Krishna Dvaipayana Vyasam Vidhi Narayanam Prabhu. It doesn't say that all the Vyasas are Narayana. But Krishna Dvaipayana Vyas, you should understand, he's Narayana, the Supreme Lord. Ko Anyat Pundarikakshat Mahabharata Kridbhavesh. Who else but the lotus-eyed Lord himself could be the author of Mahabharata?
That's from Mahabharata?
No, that's from Padmapurana.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Beginning of Padmapurana. Now it says also, that I don't know the Sanskrit anymore, that the sun and the moon can become extinguished, and somehow life will go on. But if there's no Vyasadeva in the universe, then everyone will be in actual darkness.
Right.
Quoted, but that's from the first chapter, the third chapter of the Padmapurana. Yeah. Yes, Phil.
You mentioned that Vyasadeva quotes as Purvapaksha previous authorities on Vedanta. So he wrote a separate commentary on Vedanta Sutra?
No, in the sutras. Some of the sutras are presenting Purvapakshas. And he says some idea, iti Bhadari. This is Bhadari's opinion. That's the actual sutra.
Where from comes that injunction, Paramatma?
Well, it's quoted by Vatsayana, his Nyaya Bhashya. I don't know where he got it from. Maybe he made it up or his teachers made it up. It comes out, we know it from the Nyaya school. Vatsyayana and then his follower Udyotakar, who wrote the Vartika, they quote this principle. Paramatam, apratishitam, anumatam.
Opponent's
opinion, if it's not specifically contradicted, can be accepted. Mm-hmm. We don't have to, because there are our opponents, we can't accept anything they say. Whatever they say that we don't contradict, we'll take it.
Okay.
We'll quote, our acharyas will quote from Shankaracharya sometimes.
Okay.
When there's something he says that's useful and not confused. Yeah. And Charlie Chaplin. And yeah.
It's been last time I remember that. I don't know, maybe it's just a funny story, but yeah, Astavakra gave up his body at Kushan Sarovar, and when he was doing bhajan at Kushan Sarovar, and he gave up his body there.
I don't know.
I don't know, but he avoided the two of the disciples. This is his deepest thing. But I don't know, it's a different
story. Well, it's a different story. Maybe it's something else that happened to him at a different time.
It's written in the book, actually.
Well, it's written in a book, it must be right.
Especially in this kind of book.
I'm not sure.
Gave him his money there.
Gave him his money.
And it said that Rabbi Lavi left.
Didn't he get a benediction to live a really long time? Because he was supposed to die when he was 16 years old. That's somebody else? You sure?
Sure.
That's Ashtravakra. Oh, and who is the scholar was actually Varuna? Oh, it's Markandeya. Okay. That was Ashtravakra.
Yeah. It's too crooked.
That was really Ashtravakra?
Yeah. It's crooked and the proposition is broken.
Okay, and then he felt sorry and he went and gave up his body and Kusuma Sarovar.
That's
what
they did
in the question of Ashtravakra?
I don't know.
There are, with regard to the idea that Dharma Shastras have to be not reinvented, but...
well, actually, new ones are written.
Restated.
Yeah.
It seems like Srila Prabhupada very strongly advocates accepting the principles of the Manusmriti, and there are many people who would apply Manusmriti very strictly. But at the same time, there are definitely things that are simply outdated, and that are not applicable in particular places as well. So how do we reconcile that?
Well, I don't think when you actually want to make a practical application, I don't think you can do it without adapting. I don't think somebody may be saying in ISKCON that we should take Manu literally, everything it says. I don't think any of our managers are saying that. People who have to actually deal with practical management, I don't think they would have that opinion. So actually, no. Some committee has to sit down and write and adapt the Manu's principles and look at other Dharma Shastras also.
Difficult to do that if people can't really agree on who's the divinely empowered authority.
Yeah, I mean, just like it says, if you if you have an illicit relationship with the young girl, then you just have to pay a fine if you're a brahmana. I don't think that the current opinion is going to go along with that. That you get away with just paying a fine. Yeah. So things have to be adapted according to the community's opinions also.
I mean, when was this written anyway?
Well, it's supposed to not be. What the tradition is that it's not really meant for Kali Yuga. It's meant for Dwarka Yuga, I think.
Right.
Manu Smriti.
Well,
the Prabhupada always presents it that this is our law book, Manu. So we'll take it on.
Yeah, Prabhupada very strongly argues that one should follow
Manu.
Yeah.
But I know that there was one Manaji who wrote to Prabhupada saying that she wanted to study and figure out how to apply Manu, and he wrote back very strongly, if you read this you'll go to hell. Prabhupada wrote back to the Manaji who wanted to do research into Manu Smriti. He said, you go ahead and read Manu Smriti and you'll go to hell.
Go what?
Go to hell.
Why? Why?
Because he wanted to strongly discourage her from making a study of Manu Smriti.
He also, on another occasion, he told one devotee that the Manu Smriti is meant for human beings. You people are not humans yet.
But now we're thinking of studying Manu Smriti, right?
Yeah, but the thing is, we can't take everything there and just apply it uncritically. Okay. We have to make adaptations. Some of the things are just not practical for us in this time. Or we have to understand the principles and modify the practical applications.
The difficulty is the Dharma Shastra is mostly details and applications. I mean, we don't ever want to change principles, but we understand the details.
So some of the details are relevant. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Manus teaches how a thing becomes, how different substances, different things become dirty and how to make them clean. You know, you purify one substance with water, another one with fire. You know, these things we should know.
Well, that stuff's in the Bhagavatam
also. Manu teaches that you shouldn't eat, you shouldn't put your food on the same mat that you're sitting on. You know, you shouldn't eat, you know, like there's a picture in the Bhagavatamrita of the sages, Narada, you know, Narada is a boy and he's son of the maidservant, he's serving the yogis. And they're eating on a mat, you know, they got their prasadam on the mat and they're sitting on the mat. But according to Manu, you shouldn't do that. You should sit on a mat and your food should be on the floor on a different mat. So that's practical, you know, we should know these things. Akshaya Sayaka, dual, because he had two of them. Sayaka is tuna, or I don't know what's the proper term for it in English. No, there's a word.
Quiver.
Yeah, but he had two, so it was a pair.
Why two if one is in his office?
Because it's a standard equipment, that because usually you can only fit a few arrows in each one. Most archers carry two. Tied together.
He had to have two because he was quite ambidextrous.
One on each shoulder?
He was, yeah.
Oh. Okay, he had on each shoulder, yeah. And he would have run out very fast otherwise.
Just one last question. Yesterday we heard from someone's commentary that the leader of the rishis that Kapila Dev had previously addressed was this Asuri Brahman. Is that right?
Yeah, that was Viragava?
Yeah, this is
not Viragava. Viragava is Sri Sampradaya. It was Vijaya Dhiraja? Anyway, one of the two. That's it? Okay. Hare Krishna. Okay, thank you all. Glory to Srila Prabhupada.